Welcome to the Millionaire Mindcast, where we broadcast weekly interviews with millionaire minds from across the globe to empower you on your journey of unlocking a rich and fulfilling life. It's time to unleash your millionaire within. Now, here's your host, Matty A.
What's going on, guys? Matty A here. Welcome into today's episode. I've got a great guest for those of you who are looking to build some wealth through real estate, looking to quit your job, looking to create some mailbox money, in an amazing guest with my man, Mr. Michael Blanc. Michael is somebody that has got a really amazing story in terms of highs and lows and really taking that leap of faith and the journey to becoming financially free through real estate, specifically through multifamily real estate. And we really talked about why real estate is so amazing for being the lowest barrier of entry when it comes to wealth building. And we really break down what that looks like. We talked about all of the nuts and bolts of a multifamily deal and syndications and what that world looks like to really simplify it. Being that many of you have probably heard about it, but maybe feel like, oh, I don't have tons of money to buy an apartment building, or I don't know how to find these opportunities. I don't know how to structure them. We literally broke all of that down for you in a very simple format today in today's episode. And we really talked about the importance of your first deal. He talks about the law of the first deal and how important that is to kind of setting the groundwork and in the runway for you to launch and get off of the tarmac to the path of financial freedom. And so I know you guys are really going to enjoy this episode today, because at the end of the day, you should be investing in real estate. Whether you're the person who's looking for these opportunities and finding them and optimizing them, or maybe you're like, man, that sounds like way too much work. I just want to, you know, create money in the area that I am passionate about right now, and maybe invest in syndications and opportunities and what that looks like, which we talk and break down in a little bit more detail for you guys as well. So this is going to be a really cool, informative wealth building podcast for you guys today. If you're new to the podcast, welcome. We talk all things mindset, money, and motivation to help you on your march to that million and beyond. And knowing that everybody's got a different definition of wealth, I like to pull as many successful entrepreneurs, business owners, investors, wealth builders who've gone out in their own verticals, on their own journey, in their own path, and have them share their nuggets of wisdom, what worked for them, what didn't. So that way you can pick and pull out what's relatable to you and what your goals are and when you want to achieve them by, and actually integrate to get those kind of results without having to fail your way forward and learn all these things by yourself. So if that resonates with you, I invite you to subscribe to the podcast. If you get any value from today's episode, all I ask is that you share it with a friend, a family member, somebody that you think can get some value from it. Help us organically share and spread these messages with more people that need them, right? That's the whole reason I started this podcast, was we didn't find a lot of outlets and platforms that you could plug into, be a fly on the wall and get the information, be a part of the conversations that you're going to grow into and that you're going to gain wisdom and insights from that could completely change your life. So with that being said, if you get any value from it, tag me, tag Mike on social media. And with that being said, we want to make sure that you have access to all the links, all the show notes, all the information that we talked about in today's episode. So if you head over to millionairemindcast.com, look up Michael Blanc's episode, you'll get all the links, all the resources, anything that we talked about in today's show at millionairemindcast.com. Head over to the Rich Life store and check out all the great swag and cool things that we have in there. If you're not taking advantage of life insurance yet and the infinite banking concept, head over to becomethebank.info to take advantage of that and learn more. If you want a free financial x-ray on your investment portfolio, all you have to do is text the word x-ray to 844-447-1555. And with that being said, if you're an accredited investor, you want to know more about learning on syndications, the investment opportunities that I put out there, people like Mike put out there, text the word deals to 844-447-1555 to get on that list and connect with me regarding some of those opportunities. With that being said, let's not waste any further ado. We got a great guest today. Get your notes handy, get your pen and paper ready to rock. There's going to be a lot that you're going to want to take down from today's episode. We're not going to waste any more time. Let's dig in with Michael Blanc right after this quick message from today's show sponsor.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's show sponsor. Are you struggling to close deals? Cold outreach can be a slow and brutal process, and in many scenarios, it's just wasting the time of both the buyer and the seller, especially when business owners who are trying to find qualified buyers are using inaccurate and outdated data. But it doesn't have to be this way. With LinkedIn Sales Navigator, your organization can overcome these challenges by leveraging this amazing technology and platform that translates comprehensive, high-quality buyer data into real-time insights and sales. These deeper insights empower sales reps and teams to adopt the habits of top performers, which leads to much better outcomes like building a bigger pipeline with real customers, leading to higher win rates and conversions, and of course, larger deals and paydays all around. We call this deep sales, and LinkedIn has built the first deep sales platform with the next generation of LinkedIn Sales Navigator. Right now, our Millionaire Mindcast family has an amazing opportunity to try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/mindcast. That's linkedin.com/mindcast for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/mindcast and get started.
Well, I'm excited. Welcome to the show, Michael Blanc. What is up,
What's going on, man? How are you?
You know, I'm good. I would say, you know, any day I get to wake up that my wife still loves me. I got my health. I've got two little girls that, at least for right now, still think I'm one of the coolest dudes on the planet. That's a pretty good win.
That's pretty good. Unfortunately, it changes just a little bit as I get a little older, but they're still going to be cool in your eyes. So it's definitely something to shoot for.
You know, it's funny. I was doing a recording earlier and one of the guys said the same thing. He goes, well, you know, when they get to, you know, that teenage years, there's going to be a few years that they don't think you're the coolest guy. So make sure that you soak that up now. My challenge to myself is how can I still be the coolest guy in their eyes and have that good relationship with them? Because I know there's got to be an answer to that, right?
There is one way. My daughter, who was like 13 or 14, you know, we saw her after a basketball game with her friends and we waved to her and she ignored us. So we said, there's two things that can happen. Either you acknowledge us or we are going to embarrass the snot out of you next time. She goes, okay, I'll just wave back at least. And so
she gave you the salute next time. That's great. Well, Michael, I know that you've impacted a lot of people's lives over the course of your career because of one, how you've led your own life and your story and your journey, and two, now the tools and the resources and the community and the environment that you've created for people to plug into to change their own lives and their own journey. Using the power of real estate. And I know you and I can sit here and talk till we're blue in the face about how amazing real estate is for all the different reasons, and I'm sure we will. But for those that don't know where your journey started and how you got on this path, take us back to the beginning of this entrepreneurial endeavor, going from your 9-to-5 and kind of your grind and hustle to kind of having that aha that there was more out there for you, which I think a lot of people can relate to, and how you landed on real estate and where that led you.
Yeah. I mean, it all started with that purple book that changed so many of our lives. When I read that book, I thought I was pretty smart until I read that book. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm such an idiot. You know, it doesn't matter how much money you have in the bank or what your salary is, how much passive income are you getting? And I was getting like interest and dividends. I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to fix this. And my idea, now at the time, I had a bunch of money from a software IPO because I have a software background. So I was part of software IPO. When I read this book, it really shattered me. Like, it just shook me to the core. And so I decided to quit my job. Now, I had money in the bank, so I had a runway. I was like, this was great. So I did everything at once. I kind of took all kinds of classes, learned to, you know, trade stocks and options. I hired a house flipping mentor. I took an apartment building boot camp. But my big idea was restaurants, because I was surrounded by some franchisees. And they were like, oh, yeah, it's like printing money. You just hire a guy. They run the whole thing. And you sit there and count the passive income.
So easy.
I'm like, this is great. So I went all in, man. I took all my chips in the middle of the table because I said, this is my cash flow business. And I had a spreadsheet like I always do for, you know, 20 unit expansion plan. And so I took all my net worth in there and went after this restaurant thing. And this was like in 2005 and 2006. And, you know, we got to about five restaurants until the recession hit. Make a long story short, the recession changed quite a few things for a lot of us, including myself. I subsequently lost my IPO millions in this restaurant experiment, which went pretty badly. I almost lost my house in the process. Now, while this was going on, I actually flipped a couple of houses, actually three houses, and I made great money. And I was like, oh yeah, I don't have time for this. I actually started looking for apartment building in 2006. I don't have time for that. You know, you read the books, you got to focus, which is not wrong. Not wrong at all. I just focused on the wrong daggone business. So I focused that thing into the ground. And then I was this close to going back to a job again. I was like, this is insane to me. So I was like, okay, well, I flipped a couple houses. I'm going to dig my way out with real estate, because that's another thing that was in Robert Kiyosaki's book is real estate. So while I had this bucket and it's got these holes in the bottom with water's leaking out from the restaurants, and I'm dumping water on the top end just to stay afloat with the real estate. And the problem was, you know, I'm actually losing money at the end. I'm running up my lines of credit. But from the house flipping perspective, I actually got pretty successful. I flipped about three dozen houses in two and a half years. And, you know, and that, because my money was deployed, it kind of forced me to raise money. That was a big aha moment for me as well. And I sort of kind of got into a 12 unit apartment building through one of my wholesalers. And that was a freaking nightmare, that first deal, until I got, stabilized it in like 18 months later. And then that got boring and I was flipping my houses, which of course is very exciting. And then one day I was like, man, this passive income thing is a lot of work. I'm losing money out of one. I'm still driving to every restaurant every single day. And then I'm flipping houses. I'm like, man, this is the worst passive income and financial freedom I've ever like imagined. And then I looked around, like, what of all the nonsense I've done? You know, I've done software, restaurants, I've flipped houses, got an apartment building. And I was like, my gosh, some things worked, some didn't. But then some of the things that worked didn't really give me the lifestyle I wanted. And I was like, well, I got this apartment building. That was a nightmare. But now it's just sending me a check every single month. And it's like, well, crap, maybe I should do more of that and less of this other stuff. Right. And that's kind of when I pivoted from the single family house investing. And now, after having done it, and now, you know, having people on my podcast, writing my book, and, you know, working with students, my conclusion is very strong that you don't have to spend 5 to 10 years investing in single family houses. Now, you can if you want, and if people listening, watching this are doing it, it's nothing wrong with it. I'm just saying it's not necessary. And it wasn't necessary in my world, because when I transitioned into multifamily, I got no credit from these brokers. They're like, yeah, great, Michael, house flipper man, but how many apartment buildings have you done? Well, none, but look at all the houses I flipped. And it was insane to me. I got like no credit for the other, what I thought was related real estate. And then more importantly, we figured out that you can appear more experienced than you are in a very short period of time without years of actual investing experience. And you don't need $1 million in a bank to buy a $1 million building, because you can actually raise it. And you put those two together and they're extremely powerful around this idea of raising money to do anything in entrepreneurship. Open a business, or in this case, apartment buildings. And so I have kind of developed this mission to help people become financially free with real estate, but maybe not in the way that they think, which is normally single family house, but rather with multifamily.
Yes. And we're going to dig into that today, guys, because you talked about a really key point. This is something that I struggled with was, I got to start and go through this process and these stepping stones to eventually get there, which for me was owning larger commercial assets, multifamily real estate, things along those lines. And, you know, I said, I guess the starting line is I got to learn how to wholesale houses, and then I got to learn how to flip them, and then I got to learn how to maybe start buying some single families and maybe a duplex and then a quadplex and figure out how I can get up to, you know, 150 unit apartment building. Well, that wasn't, now looking back, the requirements for getting to where I went. Now, I'm grateful for that, because there were a lot of breadcrumbs along that trail that opened doors and led me to things that I wouldn't have had otherwise without that. But I love that you bring that up, right? Because I know you get this question a lot is, I can't start there. 150 units, that's crazy. Or 50 units, that's insane, right? I don't even know how to buy one house, let alone 50, you know, doors under one property. So we're going to talk about that today, because you're talking to the expert with Michael Blanc, because this is what you have taught and trained and teach people. And you've done it in a very simple way through frameworks, processes that anybody of any experience level can plug into. And so we're going to break that down today. But I want to back up real quick to something that I think is important, because a lot of people looking at real estate or business in general as a vehicle for building wealth, and they may be looking to pivot outside of this lane that they've either been taught to stay in or have been in for their entire life, which might be a, you know, a corporate job or a career. You know, this idea of pivoting. You talked about this pivot for yourself of kind of transitioning from one to the next. What did that look like for you, and how did you get enough momentum to go out there and actually be successful and get that traction that has led you to where you're at today?
Yeah, pivot is I would say it's a gradual pivot. Almost without exception, people start doing this on the side. It's like a side gig. Because everybody who starts
doesn't have to be full time, right?
Well, no, it doesn't have to be. Not in the beginning. Because without exception, people always have full time jobs. And the reason they're getting into investing, the reason they want passive income is they want financial independence. So they don't have to keep working anymore, unless, of course, they want to. So almost always, they have full-time jobs. And so, you know, we say if you have 5 hours a week, you can do this business. Which, if you look at real estate investing, multifamily syndication specifically, if you look at I interviewed Gino Wickman recently. He wrote the book Traction on how to scale small businesses, and he wrote a new book called The Entrepreneurial Leap, where he argues that entrepreneurs are born; they can't be made. And I had a field day with Gino because I disagreed with him on that. I was nice about it, but I don't know. I kind of disagree. Where we agreed, though, was real estate. The bar for being an entrepreneur, the bar for real estate is lower than any other business in the world. I mean, anything, restaurants, mm-hmm. nightclubs, I mean, hair salons. I mean, pick your favorite business you want to start. The barrier to entry is lower than any other business that I know. And so it allows you to build this thing up on the side in a meaningful way. I mean, if you do an apartment building, even if it's a small, $1 million apartment building, you know, the acquisition fee alone could be like 30 grand, you know? And so that's a meaningful thing that you can do on the side. And then it kicks off cash flow as well. And so the pivoting always happens on the side. So if you have a full-time job, don't quit your job right now. Some do. I don't know if I would advise it. I have great respect for people who burn the boats. That's cool. You know, if you're flipping houses or you're doing some kind of other real estate strategy, don't throw it out right now. You know, make sure that you see this other thing working first. You know, maybe you've done a deal and you have a pipeline forming. You're like, man, this is going to work. If I focus on this full time and actually accelerate my progress, which is true. But this is what I love about it. These pivots happen on the side while you're doing something else.
Yep, 100%. And there's obviously a way that you can do it to set yourself up for success. How important is it to be clear on what you're pivoting to and what that plan and that preparation that goes into that plan looks like?
Yeah. So when I read the book, Real Estate, I was like, I need to be a real estate investor, because in my mind, real estate investor equals financial freedom. I mean, that's the way I parsed it. Now, that was incorrect, actually, because in my world, flipping houses was not really passive income. I didn't, and the thing is, I didn't think about this. Really, I didn't think it through. And once you get going, you're so busy that sometimes you don't even look up. But you know, there's this ladder, right? This ladder of success, whatever, your career or you know, you being the real estate investor, and you grind and you get to the top of the ladder after several years and you're like, yes, I made it. And you look around and you find that the ladder's up against the wrong wall. And this is so common for people. And I did the same thing. I did it with my own career. Right. Until I read this book. And then I did it even after that. I was like, oh my gosh, real estate investing, that's where I need to be. Wait, I didn't really think about the strategy exactly. Even with the restaurants, well, if you think it through, restaurants aren't really passive in any way. Yes, I had a guy running that stuff, but there were so many moving parts that it was not set up to be passive. Neither was house flipping. So clarity is everything. Everything flows from clarity. And I used to kind of gloss over this a little bit, clarity, schmerity. It's like this frou-frou stuff, you know, mindset stuff. You know, what a waste of time. I'm a doer, you know? But clarity, I have found when I'm clear on something, things just move, right? It's like you're sending out this giant laser energy into the universe. You're like, boom, that's where I want to be, you know? And whatever you want to call it, God or universe goes, that is a very, very precise prayer. I can work with that versus, you know, throwing stuff around, not being sure, this, that, you're waffling around, you can't get anywhere. Or worse is people don't actually think about it. They kind of just drift through. So
yeah,
to me, clarity is everything. You got to be clear.
Yep, 100%. And then, you know, I always tell people, based on what do you want to accomplish and by when, then you can kind of reverse engineer, at least in the context of real estate, what investment strategy, what product or vehicle, right? What marketing approach, what a budget, what resources, what team might you need to get in place, right? You can start to kind of fill in some of those gaps. So I figured today would be a great way for us to maybe break down what it might look like for someone that says, hey, I want to get my first apartment building that, you know, generates some cash flow, and how they can go about doing that. For those that are listening right now, I want them to understand how many people you've helped do this, and just your experience level. So I know it's changed and fluctuated. Or how many students have gone through your program now, and how many doors do you guys, your group, have under management?
Yeah, I mean, we own about 2,000 doors right now, which is interesting, but what's more interesting is the amount of people we've helped do deals. And I don't have the exact number in my head. We try to track this because we hand out these freedom coins to people who quit their jobs. We also hand out these red coins to people who do their first deal. And so we try to track this, and then we award us at our annual conference called Dealmaker Live. So I don't know exactly the number, but it's like 170 people that we know about, and it's like a total of 7,000 units, like, you know, worth like $350 Amazing. $million. And what's cool about it is, and then we kind of lose track with people. Because I'm all about the first deal. In fact, that coin's something called the law of the first deal, which is on the back of this coin. The law of the first deal is so unusual because it's so universal, which means that people who have done their first multifamily deal, let's define multifamily. While not technically correct, a duplex in my world is a multifamily building. If you approach it from a multifamily mindset, as in, oh, I'm going to get into multifamily, but I can't wrap my head around anything bigger, so I'll just do a duplex. Mm-hmm. The law of the first deal basically says that if you do your first multifamily deal, you're about 1 to 2 years away from quitting your job. And this is so, and I wrote my book around it, and I have guests on my podcast that just, you know, they just confirm this. There's really no exception to the rule. If someone's a super slow learner, it might take 2 or 3 years, but really it's 1 to 2 years, because the first deal is the hardest to do, takes the longest, and is always the smallest. The second one, unlike single family houses, it's one at a time. You can only do one at a time. You do one, do second, or third. With multifamily, it ramps up. So let's say you do a duplex, two units. By the time you're done with the duplex, you're like, oh man, that was a lot of work. I wish it were a little bigger. Now you're not going to do a duplex again. You a 10 unit. You're like, oh, 10 units. Oh no, that's so big. And then you get into it and you're like, oh my gosh, oh, that was a lot of work. I wish it were a little bigger. And so you go to 25 after. So and then after 25 is then 50 plus, right? So pick your favorite entry point, whatever your comfort zone is. If you start in 20 units, you're going to do 20, 50, 100. That's how it goes. And therefore, you don't need 10 deals. You need 2 to 3 deals. And the income from those usually covers people's living expenses, and they are able to quit their job. And so because of this law of the first deal, we can focus all our resources on helping people do that first deal. And
that's amazing.
And so that's why that's so powerful. Now, one thing that I have not done as much as followed up with those people that we gave these coins to and go, hey, how's it going? Because they kind of, they graduate, right? They graduate. But I want to pass out more of these blue coins, the big ones, because our mission is to help people quit their jobs. And so that's the power of multifamily. It's the fastest way that I know in the history of mankind to replace your living or cover your living expenses through any business whatsoever is through multifamily real estate.
That's amazing, man. So let's talk about, you know, you got these people in your world, people listening right now that are going, all right, I want to do my first 10 unit or 20 unit. You know, for those that there's some steps in the framework, right? In terms of how do you find the opportunities? How do you analyze them? How do you, you know, get the right capital partners in play? So, you know, from a high level perspective, guys, if you want to know this, you know, and really get granular and down into the weeds, we're going to have links to all of Michael's stuff that you guys can go and check out. One of my favorite, and I will just say this, I haven't told you this yet, favorite spreadsheets of all time is your Deal Syndicator spreadsheet. Awesome. One of the best that I'm a spreadsheet junkie. I've probably got 20 or 30 of them over the years, and probably top 2 or 3 spreadsheets. Did you design that yourself?
I did. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Well, I used it when I started doing apartments in 2006. I was marketing in Texas. I'm now in Georgia. I used to be in Northern Virginia. And so I developed this thing to be able to analyze deals quicker. And so when I started blogging and people were asking me all these questions, the first thing I did was, well, you need a spreadsheet. And so yeah. I just kind of dusted off, made it a little better. And since then, you know, I have now kind of like a committee that's in charge of the SDA that, you know, it gets feedback from different people and then, you know, makes it a little better. So we
better and better.
We still continue tinkering with it. Yeah.
It's amazing. So for you guys that don't understand what this deal analyzer is, ultimately, there is some, and it's, what is the deal? And is it like $100 or something like that?
Yeah. It's $129 at the moment.
$129.
Yeah.
And money well spent, because it's one, the spreadsheet, but then Michael goes through it and explains how to use it and all the different ways that you can analyze a multifamily property.
Yeah.
And this will give you that confidence as you start to look at deals, whether it's on LoopNet or you have brokers bringing you opportunities. As you start plugging and playing, it does a lot of the heavy lifting for you. And I like to call it as kind of being, you know, metaphorically, the bumpers to your bowling alley. It helps you make sure that you're going to bowl down the center of the lane and hit pins, put points up on the board. And as you do more and more and more of that, more repetition, you just get better and better at bowling down the center of the lane in terms of your analyzing of deals, right? So I'll digress on that. That's my little soapbox for you because I love it. I'm a raving fan of it.
Appreciate checks in the mail, man. Yeah. And analysis is so key to being able to do that. And we try to make it as easy and as deterministic as possible, like you said, to stay in on the bowling lane so you don't do a bad deal, hopefully.
Yeah, we'll talk about how important it is in terms of analysis. Why? Well, is that where you see most people mess up and, you know, buy a bad deal right out of the gate on their first one? Because I always tell people that first deal is so critical for setting you up for success on the second.
You know,
right?
I don't know if I see. There are multiple points, I suppose, of where people can mess up. The biggest way I see people mess up is they don't even get started. That's the big thing. Because here's the thing, when you're clear on something, you know, we're all entrepreneurs listening, watching this. We are resourceful people. We'll figure it out, right? We will figure stuff out. The thing that holds us back is mindset issues, typically around, you know, clarity, like we talked about. We're not exactly sure what we want. And number two, we don't believe properly, right? Because if you don't believe in something or yourself or that you can do something, then you're never going to take any action, right? If you can't believe you can buy a $1 million building, then you're... The SDA, this analyzer, won't do you any good because that presupposes that you wanted to get started. So the first point of failure is that most people dismiss it, typically because they feel like apartment buildings is an advanced strategy and only something for millionaires, right? So, oh my gosh, I got to get 10 years of experience first and I got to accumulate all that money I'm going to make. I'm going to dump that into apartment buildings. So they, in their mind, it's the one, it's a two-step process, right? 5 to 10 years of single family experience and then graduate to apartments. Not a bad plan, but completely unnecessary. So the biggest thing is around the mindset, which goes back to, again, like I said, your ability to believe. If you can believe that it's possible within 30 days that you can appear very experienced to a broker and a broker doesn't have no idea of no prior experience at all. If you could believe that, that's one thing. If you could believe that you can raise money, that you could raise $200,000, if you could believe that, you're like, okay, now I'm ready for the next step. Now I'm ready for your daggone analyzer. Now I'm ready for this because without it, I'm not even there yet. So that's the first point of failure, is believing something to the point where you are going to start taking action.
So you got the belief aspect out of the way. Let's say they go, I can do this. Next step is to start doing what?
Yeah, you need two things. You need deal flow and you need capital, right? So those are two things. And the deal flow all comes from brokers, you know, and I have put up the bandit signs. I've sent out the yellow letters and the postcards.
It's not the same as single family, right?
It was so much fun. You know, it was quite fun, but it doesn't really work on the multifamily for some reason. So I'd like to come up with clever techniques around deal flow, but it's kind of boring. It's all through brokers. And it's all specifically through, you know, through brokers that you build a relationship with. And the cool thing about it is you don't need 10 brokers feeding you deals. You need like two. Now, finding those two can be a challenge, but it doesn't take months. It takes weeks to build relationships with these brokers. And so these brokers then will start feeding you deals. And that's when analysis comes into play, because when I first got started in 2006, it took me 4 hours to answer the question, what is my max allowable offer? Like, what's my MOA? What's my MOA? M-A-O, right? Okay, what is it? A-R-V-M-A, okay. Mm-hmm. And it took me 4 hours. And so because I didn't have the technique we have now, and we didn't, of course, didn't have the analyzer we have now as well, so it took me a long time. But really, we got it down to almost 10 minutes at this point using the spreadsheet. Because one of the things I was doing is I was going way too deep on a marketing package, you know, and almost always the asking price is too high. Everybody knows this. So you're right. Going to say, okay, well, it's not worth that, but you have to be able to substantiate yourself. You can't say, well, you're asking 2.1, I'm offering 1.5. And the broker's like, how'd you come up with that? Oh, I don't know. It just seemed like a good, 30% less,
Yeah, right.
So you can't do that with a broker. You're not going to build a relationship. So you have to tell them, well, you know what? I looked at your income. You only have 5% vacancy. And typically in my experience, it's 10%. So I'm going to adjust that a little bit. And your expenses are only, 35% of your income, but typically in my experience is 50%. And these are all techniques you can learn. And that, of course, you get a new net operating income, and then you apply this cap rate to the cap rate that was provided by the broker. And therefore, the value is less. And when you approach a broker in that way, I call it a 10-minute offer, you're not itemizing the expenses. You're using rules of thumb. You're not itemizing this. You're not making phone calls. You're not going to the internet, right? You're not doing deep research on this stuff. You're using rules of thumb, which are almost always correct. And you're speaking with a broker in terms they understand: price, cap rate, NOI, net operating income, right? And you're not talking to them about investor returns or equity splits or acquisition fees or cash on cash return. They don't know what it is and they don't care, right?
Yep.
So you use rule of thumb and you apply it in this way. And now you can do something very powerful. You can analyze a deal in phase one, the 10-minute offer in 10 minutes without spending a lot of time. And number two, you can get back to the broker very quickly with a meaningful response. And now the broker's like, holy cow, this guy's responsive, right? And they're giving me feedback, which is super awesome. What happens now is every time you do that, it elevates you higher up in their list of buyers in their mind, because they have so many buyers. And most, I ask brokers, when they send a deal out, how many people respond? They said about 20% on their list actually respond to them with something, whatever. So if you just by responding, you're now in their top 20%. If you respond with something that's actually intelligent and useful, you're probably in the top 10%. If you do things like maybe you hop on a plane and meet with them and tour some properties, you're like in the top 5%. And so now as a new investor without any kind of track record, just by behaving in this way, you can become one of their 5% on their buyers list, right?
I love that. I think that you just brought up some really key points that I just want to make sure we highlight in terms of you don't need to be an expert of all things multifamily. Just simple things like that are going to be differentiators and separators that give you a chance to win just that one property, right? Because that's really all it takes. I would just say you're just one deal away from changing your life.
For sure.
And so if you can do those little things well, and that was kind of what I was going to ask is, what does your cadence and your rhythm look like in terms of how you're keeping in touch and staying in touch and kind of positioning yourself as somebody that this broker wants to build a relationship with and wants to send deals to? And you talked about some of those things. Any other creative, strategies or things that you see people kind of work into their weekly rhythm and routine is just, hey, let me make sure I'm checking these boxes every week and doing these activities. And knowing that if I do this at this frequency, most likely it's only a matter of time until I get X result or outcome.
All right. So there's two things you got to do to be taken seriously by brokers. We talked about one of them, and it really boils down to educating yourself. So knowing how to analyze using this 10-minute offer technique, you might not know exactly how to, but it's just a matter of educating yourself, right? It's just a matter of, watching a YouTube video or buying a course or whatever the case may be. It's education. Educating yourself so you know about these things like cap rate and cash on cash and how to analyze deals. You know how things go. You know what the closing process. You know due diligence. You just know stuff. You're educated. Okay. Now, when you educate yourself, it affects your language, right? If I learn how to play golf, okay, and I walk into the golf course not knowing golf terms and I don't know golf etiquette. Oh gosh, there's so much unwritten golf etiquette. People immediately peg me as a newbie. And they treat me like a newbie. Therefore, when you start calling brokers, don't behave and talk like a newbie, right? Use towards like cap rate or reposition or value add, wherever the term is, be familiar with those. And what happens when you educate yourself and use that language, you get a certain amount of confidence with that, okay? It's how you speak to people. And a great barometer on how you are perceived is the response from the broker. If the broker says, hey, Michael, this is great. you're such a great guy. I'll tell you what, send me your proof of funds and I'll send you the deals. You know? And so the broker just told you to go away because you sound like an idiot.
Are you interested in boosting your income by an extra $50,000 this year? If so, you're going to love what I've got in store for you. I am beyond excited to officially announce an incredible opportunity to join me in my exclusive mastermind, which will include myself and 25 other hand-selected investors who are actively pursuing commercial real estate in 2024 and want to be held accountable to making sure they buy their first or their next commercial real estate investment property that will net them a minimum of $50,000 a year. This mastermind group will not only teach you how to do that, how to find, how to analyze, how to structure and buy these types of commercial real estate investment properties, but you'll also have an opportunity to be a part of an intimate group of high achievers that are going to take your network and your resources to a whole nother level. But here's the catch. Like I mentioned before, this is exclusive. We're only selecting 25 ambitious individuals for our founding members group who are serious and ready to take that next step in their commercial real estate investing journey. So if you are ready to increase your passive income by at least $50,000 in the next year with commercial real estate investing, then this is your moment. These spaces are gonna fill up fast. And trust me, this is the one and only time to be a founding member, which comes with some pretty special benefits. So head over to myfirst50k.com and submit your application now. Again, that's myfirst50k.com. You can head over there, check out the program, see everything that it entails, submit your application to join, and I can't wait to connect with you soon.
And so if a broker asks you for proof of funds, you just sound like a newbie. So there's something in your language or your confidence. So education is one. We just talked about that. Number two, though, is you got to build your team. And this is different than any other real estate investing strategy, really, because while I was working with people, I would never consider, building a team or even partnering with somebody. But the team in multifamily is absolutely critical. In fact, it should be in place before you call your first broker. The two most important team members you have to have recruited are your property manager and your lender. And, optionally, you have a CPA, you have an SEC attorney, whatever. So what happens now, maybe you have an advisor. You hired a mentor or you met someone at a meetup, a senior person, and you're building an advisor board. Now, the point is, when you call a broker, you don't talk about you and your experience or the lack thereof. No, you talk about your team's experience. Hey, let me tell you about. So I got property manager XYZ. They manage 3,000 units in Atlanta. Then I'm working with lender so and the national lender loan so. And I got an advisory board consisting of blah blah blah. You may have heard of them. And we are really looking to expand into the Atlanta market, right? We represent a group of high net worth individuals, and we want to get into the Atlanta market. And so now you're basically leaning on your team. So whether you have experience or not is completely immaterial because you don't really talk about yourself. And the broker perceives it as, my gosh, if you were able to assemble such a team, it's hard to, you could probably know some people, but not five, right? So obviously this guy's got something, he's serious, and I better take him seriously because if I don't, he may never call me again. So the element number two is to build your team around you. And so when you educate yourself, use the right language, you have some kind of confidence, and you approach a broker with from a team's perspective, you are going to be taken seriously. And that's the secret. And you can do that. You can do all those things in about 30 days. Okay, you take your course, you learn how to analyze deals, you recruit your property manager and your lender. Within 30 days, you can appear as if you have years of experience. And that's the power. That's the secret to appearing more experienced than maybe you feel like you are.
Yeah, absolutely. Leveraging other team members, right? And their wisdom, their track record, their resumes, your coach or your mentor, having them help you avoid mistakes that you're going to make otherwise by trying to do this on your own, getting tapped into their network or resource. I mean, there's so many different, and I always tell people, what are your thoughts in terms of, obviously, if you can do the deal on your own, great, do the deal on your own. But I've also been a big believer and proponent for newbies that are kind of getting in to make sure they win on that first one. As I always say, it's better to own a slice of a watermelon than 100% of nothing or 100% of a shriveled up raisin, right? What are your thoughts in terms of people partnering with other individuals like you or like me or another mentor or friend that they have that already has some experience in that space? What are the pros and cons of that?
Well, this is, again, different than single family house investing. Not only is a team less important for single family house investing because you're, you know, making, writing contracts through agents, whatever else. But the other thing that's different is that you very, very rarely, it is the exception that you are not partnering with someone. So as a multifamily syndicator, you are joint venturing almost all the time. And the people who don't, they will be successful, but it takes longer and their deals are smaller. And the people who joint venture do bigger deals faster and they scale faster. And so, you know, you mentioned a couple of ways. So if I'm a newbie investor, like, oh, I don't have the money. I don't have the credit. I don't have the experience, right? Okay, well, then partner with someone, but you got to bring something of value to that partner. You can't just call me up and go, hey, Michael, I want to be your partner. I'm like, really? You and 1,000 other people. But if you say, you know what? I have an assigned LOI on a deal in your target market and it's off market and I'm dealing directly with the seller. Now you have my attention, right? Now as a newbie, you have the hustle and you can bring that hustle into a partnership. In fact, we've had about 10 of our deals were in partnerships in that way. And so that's kind of the newbie getting into the game by partnering with others. And you bring something to the table. Maybe you're good at analyzing deals. And maybe the operator just, you know, is too busy and needs help with analyzing deals. Great. I'll help you. I'll work for free, right? The Robert Kiyosaki, I'll work for free. Just, you know, throw me a bone with some equity and whatever. Okay, great. Or maybe, you know, I'll help you write blog posts or do some marketing for you. What can you bring to the table? So that's a newbie getting into the game. But from a peer perspective, let's say, you know, you come in and I want to get into the multifamily game. And I know what my strengths are and I am a relationship person. I feel like I can just raise capital. I just love meeting people. I love golf, you know, I love networking. I'm articulate. I dress well, you know, and I can raise capital. Great. But the thought of an Excel spreadsheet makes me want to break out into a cold sweat. You're like, well, now I'm stuck because how am I going to analyze these deals? Well, don't get stuck. Go find someone who loves spreadsheets. You know, call up Matt and go, hey, Matt, I heard on the show that you love spreadsheets. Hey, why don't we partner together? Mm-hmm. You can be the spreadsheet guy. You handle all the details, you know, do all the due diligence and get it all wrapped up. And I'm just going to go out there and, you know, shake hands and raise the capital. And those partnerships are very powerful because you have the relationship money raiser and then you have the analysis deal flow person. And those are very powerful. That allows you to scale very rapidly, number one. And number two, now both partners can do the thing that they're good at and love to do. And I love that, right? As a house flipper, you got to do everything. And there's like 6 out of 10 that you love to do and 4, you're like, I didn't have to do that. In the multifamily, because the pie is so big, you're buying multi-million dollar buildings, there's enough to go around. Now I can go out and schmooze and network all day long and I don't have to touch a single spreadsheet, right? If I were just me, I'd have to touch a spreadsheet. I'm like, And so I'll be raising all this money and I'll never get a deal because I'm trying to avoid the spreadsheets. So partnerships in the syndication world are very common.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, key part of that is, you know, to lean on others' experiences, their wisdom, their resources, the weaknesses that you might have or the gaps you might need to fill, right? And also just to scale much faster and much quicker. So with that being said, let's talk a little bit about some of the X's and O's of a deal. Just a rule of thumb of what are some of the key things that people should be looking at and kind of spotlighting in the spreadsheet as the most important things that kind of are, you know, I like to call it my buy box criteria, right? What are the boxes that they need to check and at what, you know, level of return or what numbers or kind of, let's just say a framework, should they be looking for deals to stay within or thresholds they should be over. So that way they know, you know, what a good deal actually looks like in terms of the way Michael looks at a deal.
So everything is driven by investor returns, right? And if you're using 100% of your money, it's the same thing. It's driven by returns, right? And an investor is going to look at an investment and they're going to look at it from different angles. They're going to look at the, you know, the risk profile, how they personally like it. And then what are the returns? The returns are measured in cash on cash and cash flow and also in appreciation. And so the deal is driven by the returns of the deal. We have found that investors invest in syndication are really looking for an average annual return of 10 to 15%. And it depends a little bit on kind of deal. Is it a nice deal in a nice area or maybe a little, you know, class C? And also depends on the kind of investor. You know, the friends and family investor would be tickled pink with a 10% return because they ain't getting that anywhere, right? And that's a more sophisticated investor like 10%. I don't think so. Can you do a little better? You know what I mean? So it's going to depend on the investor. It doesn't matter. Let's say it's 13%. And this is where the syndicated deal analyzer shines because it highlights that very quickly. And then you can play with various levers. You can play with the price, the loan terms, the whatever, the equity split. You can, you just all these knobs you can do. And every time you do it, it modifies the average annual return. So what you have to do is you have to create your criteria for your investors, right? So for our goal, for all right now, we want to give our investors a 7% cash on cash return and at least a 13% average annual return, right? So that is our line of sand. Any lever I do that reduces below that, the deal's not going to work, right? And so, so therefore, now you know exactly, and then you can, like I said, play with different levers, and now you know exactly when to walk away from a deal. It's black or white. It's like it tells you when to walk and when not to. So it's all driven by the returns.
Let's talk a little bit about your perspective in terms of your specific appetite for real estate right now, your outlook on multifamily real estate as a whole. Talk to me about your experience over multifamily performing through COVID. Yeah. I'm just curious in what your perspective was when, you know, last year of March, I know for me personally, I've got multifamily, I've got retail, I've got a hotel, I've got a lot of different product in my portfolio. And my, you know, initial was like, oh shit, my entire, you know, what I've built and worked so hard for is coming crumbling down. And then actually, you know, as I leaned in and got even more dialed in areas that I knew I needed to, the team performed in great ways. We actually came out way stronger than we thought we would. So in terms of multifamily, what was your experience last year with COVID and what's your outlook heading into, you know, 2021 and beyond?
Yeah, our biggest concern when it hit in mid-March was we were very concerned about the April rent because we were concerned that people would just choose not to pay the rent because they had these eviction moratoriums and like, and so we thought there would be strategic defaults. They're like, I'll just, not because they couldn't, just because they could get away with it.
No accountability.
No accountability. Yep. And that did not happen. My theory is that there was so much uncertainty going on with people's jobs and health, whatever. And they're, you know, and that they, the one thing that they did not want to risk is the roof over their head. And so they decided, I think that they wanted that kind of stability and they continue paying their rent, they continue paying a mortgage. With, of course, the exception of people who couldn't because of COVID. That's different. And there were people affected by that. And that was an issue. Except for the government stimulus. Now, had the government stimulus not been different, if the government stimulus helped, the moratorium hurt, right? Because now you can't evict someone. However, you said it made you better. It made us better, a better operator, because it forced us to start talking to our tenants more. Because now instead of giving them an eviction and sending it through certified mail, there's a conversation that goes something like this. Hey, you know, did you know you still have to pay rent? No. I didn't. I thought I could just stop paying rent. Well, no, you can't. And here's what's going to happen. Okay. Eventually you're going to get evicted and it'll be on your record and you won't be able to buy a car anymore. Did you know that?
Yep.
No. Okay. Well, let's work together. You know, maybe we can modify your lease or some sort. Or how about this? You know, you're 2 months behind. Why don't I help you move and you move out and we'll just strike the debt. There's no, you know, there's no collections on you and there's cash for keys, right? So it quote forced us to be better landlords in a way because we were forced to talk to our tenants, which is actually a good thing. So that's how we got around. And so because of that, our collections were actually equal to or greater than they were before COVID. And maybe you were seeing something similar on your end.
Yep.
And, you know, but having said that now with this $1.9 million trillion stimulus package, there's $25 billion in rental assistance in there. Like it's an insane amount of number. And there's an application process for it, and that money goes directly to the landlords. So now what it does is now I don't have to chase someone who's behind the rent. The government will just send me a check for like $20,000. I mean, that's nice. I mean, it is nice. I'm not complaining. However, without it, we would still have been okay. And that's what I like about multifamily. You know, I wasn't in multifamily in 2008. I was in single family and restaurants at the time. But even when you study 2008, how multifamily performed, it performed exceedingly well in the Great Recession. And so when I look at how multifamily performed, and I've talked to older guys who've been doing this for like 30 years, and it's the same thing. Same thing. When these down cycles, multifamily flattens out, you know, it doesn't grow anymore and rents kind of stay flat and maybe vacancies go up a little bit, but they kind of stay flat. And when the market recovers, it starts going up. And so it's almost like your downside is protected. And then when the market is good, it goes up even higher. So I just love the way it performs in down and recessions.
And do you, you're still very bullish on obviously multifamily moving forward into the future?
Well, I am after going through that. I mean, I think for better or for worse, the government, you know, got a taste for printing money and it worked so well the first three times. Let's keep on going. Yoo-hoo! Now we're kicking the can down the road, of course, but with regards to evictions and collections, it's fabulous. It's and then, you know, hopefully the vaccine will start kicking in and the economy will start normalizing. That's whatever Wall Street is kind of baking into the stock price, right? So I just think that it's we have seen the worst on multifamily. Now there's people who disagree with that, right? I think we're gonna have another set of problems possibly through inflation, but that's not till next year, Matt. So who cares about that?
Yeah, right. So what for those that are bullish and excited about multifamily as well, what are some of the emerging markets that people may not be paying attention to that you guys or your students are, you know, at least got on the radar?
Yeah, it's interesting that you say emerging markets. And, you know, when you look at the national, the headlines, you know, rents down 1.4%. Well, that doesn't sound good, you know, especially when you're calling for an increase of rents of 2.5%. That can't be good. Yes, but those are the headlines. What's happening is that maybe the national average, but it varies widely on a region by region basis. So you talked about what are some of the emerging markets. I don't know if they're emerging. I think there's a changing market where people in general are moving out of the coasts into the middle of the country, specifically south, right? So people are, you know, they're fleeing out of New York City, San Francisco, right? They got a taste for what it's like to work at home. And their employer was like, oh my gosh, stuff's still getting done. I don't need this giant office building. Well, maybe I can get rid of that thing. And the employer's like, well, gosh, maybe I don't have to drive to the office anymore. I'll just, you know, I'm just going to take my Bay Area salary and I'm going to go to, I don't know, Phoenix, right? And so we have all these people moving into areas that are lower cost of living, sunnier, higher quality of living. And so you see this giant influx into the Southeast, Phoenix, Texas. So the entire country seems like it's moving south. So if you look at the rental rates and the collections there, I mean, like for example, Atlanta or Huntsville, where we have properties, we're increasing rents. Our occupancy is like 96% and we're increasing rents.
Wow.
It's because people are moving into these areas because the cost of living is so much lower. Like Huntsville, perfect example, like emerging market. I wish it were bigger and we could buy deals in there every single week, but you know, it's a smaller market, but cost of living low, a lot of infrastructure there. There's theaters, libraries, parks. There's a lot of jobs moving there. A lot of a lot of aerospace and engineering and that kind of stuff. And people want to be there. And they're taking their their New York salary or their Boston salary, and they're maintaining that, and they're living. It's like they're getting they're doubling or tripling their pay raise. And so we're seeing a lot of shifting around like that. And I think that's where people can take advantage of is taking advantage of let's say growing markets. I don't know about emerging, but they're certainly growing through these demographics. Changes.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of opportunity out there. What do you say to the person that goes, man, it just doesn't feel like a good time to buy right now, and they're trying to time the market? What do you say to that person that, you know, really is committed to this as a wealth building vehicle, but has that little narrative and chatter going up on in their head that whether it's COVID or whether the market's inflated or whatever it may be, what do you say to that person?
The problem is it's very never really a good market, is it? I mean, before COVID, it wasn't the right time to invest. It was hot. And then the day after COVID hit, it obviously wasn't a time to invest because of COVID. So wait a minute. So was it 2 hours perfect time to invest, like somewhere in between, or did it just go from one to another? You know, and it's I think timing the market is not a good idea. You have to look at the macro picture, right? The macro picture. It's like when you're buying gold or a stock. You really love a stock, or you say, I'm gonna buy a gold, I'm gonna hedge against inflation. Well, okay, if you're on a buying program, you will buy a little bit over time. Okay. And so you win some, you lose some, but you're accumulating a certain asset over time. Now you do that if you're a technical trader, great, then look at your support lines and your resistance and do whatever. But at the end of the day, you're really making investments. So the sophisticated investor saying, okay, I'm going to deploy X $400,000 a year in a particular asset class, multifamily, mobile home, whatever. So I need four deals. I'm going to invest $100,000 in each, and I'm going to do it with one to two operators, right? Because the operator is key. And so they will, let's say it's two operators. two asset classes. They're going to do two deals with multifamily, one operator, and they might do mobile homes with another operator, let's say. So they are, you know, and now, and they are convinced now that from a macroeconomic perspective, the long-term outlook for both of these asset classes is sound. Therefore, I am going to invest right now, because you can't just say, okay, I'm ready to invest, and you call your stockbroker, hey, can I get myself in a multifamily deal? No, because, you know, it takes some time to get a deal together. So timing to market, I think, is a mistake, because it's almost never a perfect environment, really, for anything. I mean, yeah. Starting anything, weight loss, you know, whatever you want to do, it's never really a good time to do anything. And so you have to start being comfortable and getting started with something when not all the stars are aligning.
Yep. And that's where you got your frameworks, right, that you can operate within to at least be the guardrails for buying something. Because 50-50 hindsight, there's been a lot of times that I've put an asset in my portfolio. I'm like, oh, I don't know. And then I look back and I'm like, oh, that actually was a great buy. And, you know, because one, I had my fundamentals of why I bought it. But two, it didn't really matter where the market was at, whether it was plateaued and stale, or it was on fire, or it was buyer's market.
Yeah.
Right. You go back and you fall on your fundamentals and your frameworks that give you the guardrails, and then you just got to keep taking action. I'm curious, what's the big outlook for Michael Blanc? What's the portfolio look like in 5 years? What is the big vision that you're continuously, you know, locked in on and moving forward towards?
Yeah, you know, it's expanding what we have, and you know, as long as your quality of life does not go down, why not keep going, right? So you have this arbitrary goal of 10,000 units. It's an arbitrary goal. It could be 5. It could be 15. It doesn't really matter. Yeah. It's really all about, you know, the people around you on your team. And I know that now. It's really a focus on the people. And if you have the right people, it's amazing what you can do. So I want to spend a lot more time working with my team, making sure that I have the right people in the right seats. And then from the other side of the business is I want to reach more people. I want to reach all real estate investors who want to quit their jobs. And, you know, we've only dented, you know, just made a small dent in it. Most people are still gravitating towards single family houses because that's what everybody around them, that's where the role models are. So I want to reach more people that have real estate on the brain and are thinking they want to quit their job. You know, they're rich dad, poor dad, and they want to go out doing it. And, you know, God bless wholesalers and flippers. It's all good. But that's where I want them. When I think in real estate, I want to show them how they can actually quit their job in 1 to 2 years versus, say, 10 years, if ever. Most, you know, people have a hard time doing it with single family houses. And so I just want to get better at reaching people, getting the message out more and improving our programs so they become more and more effective.
I love it, man. Well, you've built a world-class brand with world-class content. And I agree, the wholesaling and flipping, that's active. That's definitely not your mailbox money, like the multifamily side is. So for those of you that are listening right now and you want to know more about the different products, courses, spreadsheets, and just the community in general, what Michael has built, it's amazing. You got some world-class operators and investors in your community, right? So that's a testament to you and what you've attracted and also what you've cultivated and kind of built from the ground up. So where is the best place for them to go if they want to learn more about how they can get involved in multifamily real estate?
Yeah, the website is themichaelblanc.com because there's only one. Two great entry points are, you know, the book here. It's called Financial Freedom with Real Estate Investing. And it's on Amazon because it really goes deep on kind of some of the things we talked about right now. It really helps you visualize and say, hey, is this a possibility for me? And then, you know, check out my podcast. It's the Apartment Building Investing Podcast. And our focus really is on helping people break into the business so they can quit their jobs. And those are two great things that people can do if they are curious to learn more.
Yeah, those are two great places to start, guys. That'll kick your journey off and kind of give you some of those stepping stones to finding the right path for your wealth building journey in multifamily real estate. We'll link all of those up at millionairemindcast.com on Michael Blanc's episode. Michael, brother, as always, man, great to connect with you. Always fun seeing what you're up to. And I'm looking forward to hanging out with you at the GoBundance event here in the summer.
I look forward, Matt. Thanks for having me on.
Cheers, brother.
Well, that wraps up this week's episode. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that interview. And if you did, all I ask is that you share it with somebody else who maybe needs to hear this today or that could gain some value from something that was talked about or discussed in today's interview. You just never know, one piece of information, a conversation, a tool, a resource can completely transform and change the trajectory of someone's life or their business. So if you get any kind of value or you want to support the show, all we ask is that you help us organically get this in front of more people. Also, for those of you who are really looking to accelerate your wealth building journey and unlock more financial freedom, get more time back, and just level up your life, your business, your finances, be sure to head over to therichlifeacademy.com to check out all the amazing products and resources that we offer to our Millionaire Mindcast family, whether that's one-on-one coaching with me, courses from our guests, all kinds of free content, downloads, checklists, upcoming event info on how you can connect with us live in person, all kinds of great valuable tools. You can get that over at therichlifeacademy.com. Last but not least, I always want to know, who do you guys want to hear me interview next? Let me know. Shoot me a text at 844-447-1555. With that being said, until next time, keep investing in yourself and your wealth on your march to a million and beyond. Cheers, my friend.